Welcome to the Christchurch London podcast. This is a talk from our Sutton service. To find out about upcoming talks at each of our services, or to listen to other talks, please visit christchurchlondon.org.
Morning, everyone. Lower your expectations. I'm definitely not supercharged. It's January. Happy New Year. How are you all doing? Okay, you've been worse. So great to see you. Missed you all over the last 2 weeks. Hope you had a really great COVID-free Christmas. Really excited by what the term and year have ahead for us. Next Sunday, we're actually starting a brand new sermon series. We're going to spend most of the next 2 months in the New Testament letter 1 Peter, and we're going to be looking at the subject of identity. What does the Bible say about who we really are? Really looking forward to that, and the amazing Joanne Wells from our central service is going to be here and kicking that off. Today, therefore, is a kind of standalone talk, which is kind of more ominously titled Vision Sunday. What's this service particularly all about? Now, if you know me, you know I'm not like a huge fan of Vision Sundays. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote a little bit about this. I think sometimes leaders or churches can get more obsessed with the vision than they do with Jesus. And I've shared this before. When we kind of started this service just over a couple of years ago, when the first one of these came up, I was kind of really praying about, like, what should I share? What should I say? And I felt like what I thought was a nudge from God saying, Andy, don't set a vision for the service, at least not right now. If you ask me, what's the vision for our service? I'd say, well, there isn't really one. Instead, I felt God say, instead, lay some foundations upon which everything else is built. I thought, I can do that. And so we kind of talked and prayed about what those kind of foundations would be. And I did a really simple talk from Mark chapter 6, the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000, the only miracle that occurs in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and just laid out four foundations, a bit like the four legs of a table upon which everything else in this service is built. Now, I know you all remember every talk I've ever given. I know you will listen to it on repeat at home and make copious notes, but for the sake of anyone who's new, I thought I'd just briefly remind us what those four values are. What are we building this service on? Number one, everyone is welcome. When Jesus feeds the 5,000, he's tired, he's grieving, his cousin John the Baptist has just been killed, but he just wants to welcome everybody. He just wants to feed the whole of the crowd, and it's the same for us. This is a community where every single person is welcome. And actually, what we're doing in terms of welcoming Hong Kongers right now is a great way of doing that. We have a Cantonese service in the marquee out the back today. Pray for them in the cold. We are looking for another venue locally that we can house them. Just to say briefly on that, our goal on that is integration. Our goal is one church, not two. But we recognize for many of the Hong Kongers who are making their home in the local area, there's just a lot of challenges, kind of getting to grips with the language in particular, learning the local culture. I've spoken to a lot of Hong Kongers who say we only understand 20 to 30% of what's being said on a Sunday. And so we're doing this now and then, once or twice a month, as a bridge, as people kind of slowly get to know what's going on in the local area so they can make this church their home. But our goal is one service rather than two. Value number one, everyone is welcome. Value number two is we want to build a community where many, many people find faith in Jesus, grow in relationship with him, and enjoy the life and joy and peace that only he can bring. Part of the point of Jesus feeding the 5,000, he explains, is it's not really about bread. The bread is symbolic of something much deeper. Jesus wants to transform us from the inside out, and it's the same for us. Like, we are a group of friends meeting together, but we are much more than that too. We think nobody changes lives like Jesus. He's our hero. Like, he's our best friend. There's no one like him. And we want as many people to explore relationship with him and grow in that relationship as possible. That's why we think things like Alpha are really important. Value number three for us is we want to make disciples. When Jesus feeds the 5,000, he doesn't do it himself. He says to the disciples, you go feed them. And it's the same for us. This is not to be a community that's about the people on the stage. Building this church is a disciple's job. And so if you are a disciple, you are as involved as I am in making this happen. And actually, this is a big one for me in that I don't really go in for the whole leadership thing. Like, I get far more excited about raising up others and seeing them walk into what God's got for them than I do about doing things myself. And value number four is we are just utterly and totally dependent on the power and presence of God. Part of the point of this miracle by Jesus is it is a miracle by Jesus. And just as he looks to the Father before multiplying loaves and fishes, so we want to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. That's why things like Encounter are so important in a couple of weeks' time. And we would encourage you, come to that, and let's start the year as we mean to go on with our eyes fixed on Jesus. So those are the four values for our community, and those values haven't changed. And there are no new values. So should I just end the talk there? You'd love that, wouldn't you? Too bad for you. I've got a few more thoughts prepared. Rather than laying out any new values, what I want to do is go a little bit deeper into what those values represent. And the reason is because that's exactly what happens in Mark's gospel. Mark chapter 6, Jesus feeds the 5,000, and then two chapters later, Jesus feeds the 4,000. And if you're like me, you read this second miracle and think, has the author, Mark, put it in by mistake? Like, is this a repeat of the same miracle with just lower numbers of people being fed? Like, what on earth do we learn in the second miracle that we haven't already learned in the first miracle? Well, this is one of those moments where it's really helpful to learn the context of Mark's gospel. Possibly the main reason Mark writes his gospel is he's writing to those who feel outside of the purposes of God, to those who feel lonely and afraid and worthless and disenfranchised, to say to them, no, you are included in the plans of God. You are right at the heart of what God is doing. That's Mark's purpose. Now, remember that when it comes to Jesus feeding the 5,000 and Jesus feeding the 4,000. When Jesus feeds the 5,000, one of the things is he's deliberately doing is he is evoking memories of the great salvation story of the Old Testament, the Exodus. The Israelites are slaves in Egypt. He raises up a leader, Moses, who leads them out of slavery under Pharaoh's tyrannical rule. Their enemies are destroyed in the Red Sea. And on their way to the land of freedom, God miraculously feeds them with bread from heaven to sustain them on the journey. And so when Jesus feeds the crowds and says, I am the bread from heaven, he's basically saying, I am the one who's going to lead you out of slavery again. I am the promised Messiah. And more than that, as you feed on me, you will find the freedom from slavery that your soul is aching for. I mean, this is revolutionary stuff. For a nation that's effectively in slavery, occupied by Rome, this is massive. And if you don't believe Jesus is God, this is also blasphemous as well. Like, this is huge. That's Jesus feeding the 5,000. But then Jesus feeds the 4,000. How is that any different? Well, there are three main comparisons I want to draw out. There are others, but these are the big three that all the commentaries pick up on. Number one is the location. So when Jesus feeds the 5,000, he does it in a place called Bethsaida. This is a Jewish region. When Jesus feeds the 4,000, he does it in a place called the Decapolis. That's a region of 10 cities that is a non-Jewish region. When Jesus goes there, the crowds would have been like, what? Jesus is going there too? I don't understand. In other words, what Jesus is doing is he's saying, I'm not just bread from heaven for Israel. I am bread from heaven for everyone. I am here not just as Israel's promised Messiah. I'm here to lead everyone out of slavery. Comparison number two is the number of leftovers. Some of you will be aware that numbers in the Bible are sometimes significant. Now, they're not always significant. We shouldn't like try and study too closely to say, is this number significant or not? But sometimes they are, and we know the numbers of leftovers in these miracles are significant because Jesus tells us they are in Mark chapter 8. How are they significant? Well, when Jesus feeds the 5,000, we're told there are 12 baskets of leftovers. That immediately brings to mind the number 12, the number of the tribes of Israel. He is Israel's long-promised Messiah. When Jesus feeds the 4,000, there are 7 loaves and 7 baskets of leftovers. As we looked at in the I Am series, last term, the number 7 is a sign of wholeness or completion or perfection. In other words, Jesus is saying, my work is only whole. It is only complete when I have come for everybody. Like in a Gentile context, this is absolutely massive. And just as a small aside, a bit of bonus teaching here, the geeks among you will like this, so it's a bit off point. Actually, the word for basket in each of these miracles is different. In the feeding of the 5,000, the word for basket implies something small, a bit like a bucket that you could carry around with you. In the feeding of the 4,000, the word for basket implies something that's absolutely huge that a human being could fit it into. In the book of Acts, there's a story about Paul fleeing his enemies and actually hides in a basket. That's what is referred to in Mark chapter 8, the feeding of the 4,000. other words, way more leftovers, way more of an abundance when Jesus feeds everybody rather than just the Israelites. I just thought that detail was interesting. And then comparison number three is this. When Jesus feeds the 5,000, Mark chapter 6, we're told there are 5,000 men. Like all good Jewish communities, the men and the women and the children would sit separately. But in the feeding of the 4,000, Jesus feeds 4,000 people. It's just this wonderful picture of this diverse group of humanity all mixed in together. It's the picture of the people that Jesus is coming for. In other words, what Jesus is saying again and again is, what you thought I had come to do just for Israel, I have actually come to do for everybody. Jesus hasn't just come to set Israel free, he's come to set Egypt free and Rome free and everybody else with them. This is huge. This is the mission of Jesus. That's why these stories come twice. If you know my preaching, you know I need a story every now and then to keep me interested. So let me tell you a story to help you try and feel this in a different way. Before I worked for Christchurch, I worked for the BBC as a news and primarily a sports journalist. So I did like football commentating, sports reporting, stuff like that. And my second ever gig was I was reporting on the World Indoor Athletics Championships at the National Indoor Arena. And I was very junior, very inexperienced reporter. It was only my second or third day on the job. And so I wasn't commentating or reporting. I'd not done much of that. I was basically kept out of the way to interview athletes when they had competed in their respective event. But as you can imagine at an event like the World Indoor Athletics Championships, like there's a lot of press there and they're grouped into a kind of hierarchy. So when the athletes have competed in their event, you kind of come off the track and the first section is what I would call press section A. This is full of all the kind of glamorous presenters that you would see on TV, BBC, Sky, ITV Sport would all be there. Very impressive, very kind of swanky, very posh, press section A. Once the athletes have done all of those interviews, they then get to press section B. Second tier down, this would be like Eurosport, some of the international newspapers, New York Times, places like that. Then you get to press section C, the kind of local TV reporters that have built relationship with the athletes that you would kind of like see on like local TV. And then once all of those interviews have been done, you then get to press section D. Now, at the time, I was working for BBC Radio WM. WM stands for West Midlands, not a hotbed of sporting talent. And so, as you can imagine, I was kept in press section D. This is basically a cage, like a dungeon. And you can imagine the athletes have done like dozens and dozens of interviews in press sections A, B, and C. Who on earth is going to listen to an interview on BBC Radio WM that's not previously heard it somewhere else? And so every athlete would do all these interviews, and there'd be me like a character in Oliver Twist. Please, would you talk to me? Okay. And off they walk past, no one would talk to me. Next person, please, would you talk to me? No, walk past, no one wanted to talk to me. And it was a pretty soul-destroying existence. However, one of the competitors at the World Indoors was a young guy by the name of Daniel Keynes. He actually won gold at the World Indoors. He won gold at the European Championships as well. A really quick runner and a minor claim to fame. I actually went to school with Daniel Keynes. I sat next to him in A-level French. I actually raced him on sports day. Came a close second. And he was running for Team GB. And it was like 2001. So it wasn't like a big year for British medal hope. So this was a big story. During one of Daniel Keynes' qualifying races, he ended up colliding mid-race with another athlete. And he managed to qualify, but at the end of it, he had blood pouring from a wound in his arm. And there was some argy-bargy at the end. Clearly, he wasn't happy. Words were exchanged. And so a big story had now become a colossal worldwide story. Daniel Keynes, however, is not a happy bunny. He thinks he's been treated unfairly. And he's qualified, but he storms off the track, gets to press section A, BBC, Sky, ITV are there. Hey, Dan, tell us what's happened. Blood everywhere. Doesn't want to talk. Storms past. Gets to press section B, Eurosport, New York Times. Doesn't want to know. Press section C, local news who actually know him personally. Doesn't want to talk to them. And then there's me in the cage. Hey, Dan, want to talk to me? And Daniel Keynes stops to talk to me. And it was the greatest moment of my life. And I can remember, like, over his shoulder, I am looking at some of the glamorous presenters from, like, leading TV channels. And I saw this one very attractive lady whose chin dropped to the floor as if to say, why is he talking to him? Like, who's that? Why would Daniel Kanes want to talk to that weird, like, then skinny, spotty, early 20s guy? That's Mark's gospel. Mark's gospel is written to those in the cage. Those at the end of the line. Those who think, why would anyone want to talk to me? Why would anyone be interested in me? That's why Mark is writing his gospel. And if you have started 2022 thinking, has God got anything good for me? Has God got a plan for me this year? I can see what he might do for those in press section A, B, and C, but has he got anything for me? The answer is unquestionably yes. He's crazy about you. He loves you. He has called you, and he has got the most amazing plan for your life. That's Mark's gospel. It's for those who feel on the edges. It's for those who feel on the outside. And here's what I find interesting about Mark's gospel, is the feeding of the 5,000 happens in Mark chapter 6, and the feeding of the 4,000 happens in Mark chapter 8. In between, in Mark chapter 7, is a short story that actually links the two. In fact, it kind of opens the way for Jesus to leave the feeding of the 5,000 Jews and go to 4,000 people who feel like they are in press section D. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to read this story very briefly. It's just six verses, and then just draw three lessons for us as a community in 2022. That interestingly, during the I Am series last term, I've been thinking and praying about this story. It just somehow kept on coming up, either in my own prayer life, either in things other people were saying. And during the I Am series, John Fenn, when he was preaching, actually unexpectedly talked about this story. And I was sitting just down there and having a real God moment and think, I think I need to speak on this at the start of the year. So big thank you to John on this. The story is in Mark chapter 7. We're going to read from verse 24. And the context is Jesus has just fed the 5,000 and he's about to go and feed the 4,000. And this is what we read. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and didn't want anyone to know it, yet he couldn't keep his prison secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. First, let the children eat all they want, Jesus told her, for it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Lord, she replied, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. Then he told her, for such a reply, you may go. The demon has left your daughter. She went home and found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. Three things for our community at the start of this year. Lesson number one is this: we must keep our heart open to people. That's the main point of Mark's gospel. That is the main point of this story. We are told two things about Jesus and four things about this woman in this story. Two things about Jesus. Firstly, he left Bethsaida and he went to the vicinity of Tyre. That's a Gentile region. The people will be thinking, what? He's going to press section D? No way. And then secondly, we're told this, verse 24, he entered a house. This is a huge deal. In the book of Acts, the disciple Peter is preaching a sermon. And in the middle of the sermon, he says this, chapter 10, verse 28, he says, you are well aware that it is against our law for a Jew to associate with or even visit a Gentile. This is not just a radical crossing of boundaries for Jesus. He is breaking the law. Like, no rabbi did this. It's like, what? Like, why would you want to go to them? And this woman notices this. She's like beginning to work out how Jesus is operating. We're told four things about her. Firstly, she's a woman. Like, at this point in history, no rabbi would ever associate with a woman, certainly not give her the dignity of a conversation, particularly in public. Secondly, she is Greek. That means she's a Gentile. She's a non-Jew. Thirdly, she's born in Syrophoenicia. That means she's a foreigner. So she is triply marginalized. And fourthly, her daughter has a demon. She is about as much of an outsider as you can get. And yet she watches Jesus. And she realizes, oh, hang on, Jesus is coming for me too. And Jesus gets this, and so he kind of tests her. He says this, well, you know, first let the children eat all they want. Remember, he's just fed 5,000 people. Like, in other words, aren't I here just for Israel? Like, they're the children of God. I've come for them, haven't I? And then it seems like he insults her. It seems like he calls her a dog. Like, it's not right to take their bread and give it to dogs. What's he doing here? Well, there was a word in the culture of the time that Jews used to describe Gentiles that called them dogs. It was very rude. It was very disrespectful to modern-day ears. There's no direct translation, but we probably think of it as a swear word. That's how kind of insulting it was. Jesus does not use that word. He takes the word for dog, and he softens it. The best likeness I can give is he almost kind of playfully calls her a cute little fluffy puppy. Like, that's the kind of feel you get from the word that Jesus uses. In other words, he's kind of playing with her. In other words, like, you're an outsider. Like, that's who they say you are. I've not come for you, have I? And the woman's reply, she kind of plays along with Jesus. She's seen how he works. He goes to press section D. She's like, yeah, but even cute fluffy puppies get the blessing from the master. They get crumbs too. And if they get crumbs, then I definitely do as well. And when she gives that answer, Jesus is like, oh, wow, you've worked it out. You're going to get the blessing that you long for. The demon has left your daughter. You can now go. And because of where this story comes in Mark's gospel, he puts it here deliberately as if to say, this interaction with this woman, as if to say, yeah, I'm an outsider, but we get the blessing too. Even cute little fluffy puppies, we get blessing as well. It kind of paves the way for Jesus to go and feed 4,000 other people who feel like they are in press section D. This is to be our heart posture over this year. This is to be a community where we love and welcome people like that. Like, particularly practical application for us right now. Most of you will be aware that as a community, we have grown a lot over the last 12 months. In fact, the majority of people in our community right now were not part of our community this time last year. It's been quite an extraordinary last 12 months. It's been great getting to know a whole load of new people. And this has been a real blessing, but it also, ladies and gents, comes with a challenge as well. Here's the challenge. If everybody in our community came on the same Sunday, there would not be enough room at the inn. There wouldn't be enough space for everyone. I guess you've begun to notice that a bit. The kids' work rooms are getting very cozy. People keep on having babies. The creche is very snug right now. Poor Vivian and many Hong Kongers, like Cantonese service out in the marquee right now. And to be honest, I don't know what we're going to do. There is no plan right now, I guess. As you grow, you either start other services or you find a bigger venue. I don't really know what the plan is right now, and we will pray and we'll talk and we'll get feedback and we'll ask God for his guidance and wisdom. But the point is this, our heart posture is not to get stressed. It's not to get worried. God will make it clear. Our heart posture is to be like this woman. In the kingdom of Jesus, there is room for me. And if there is room for me, there is just room for everybody. That's how we're to live this year. And I just want to encourage you, live that way this year. Like, let's practice hospitality. Let's open our homes. Let's get involved in connect groups. If you're going out for a drink with your mates, invite someone along who's new. Let's live with this posture of Jesus goes to press section B. And so I'm going to live with that open heart as well. Lesson number one, we must keep our heart open to people. Lesson number two is we must stay humble. When Jesus says to this lady, hang on, aren't you the outsider, the dog that the Jews say that you are? It's really interesting to me that this woman doesn't protest. She doesn't fight for position. She's like, yeah, well, maybe I am an outsider according to them. But outsiders get blessing too. It's just this deep humility. There's no sense of, oh, no, I should be in press section A, really. That's who I really am. And I think there's a lesson in that for us too. A few years ago, Joy and I, our last holiday before kids, we went to California, did a big road trip. And while we were there, one of the churches we visited was a church called the Dream Center. And I can honestly say it's probably the most extraordinary church I've ever been to in my life. The stories, the testimonies of life transformation there were the most remarkable I've ever heard. Like, people whose lives had literally been turned upside down. At the last count, they had started over 270 different projects to make a difference across Los Angeles and beyond. Gang violence dropped over like 70% in the first 2 years of their existence. It was just remarkable. And during the service, the pastor, a guy by the name of Matthew Barnett, got up and he told the story of the Dream Center. And he basically said this: look, when you come to a place like LA, it's really easy to be dazzled by many impressive and ambitious people round about. But when we started this church, we felt God simply say this: if you reach the people that no one wants, I will give you the people that everyone wants. And I just wept. And they decided, we're going to build this church on reaching those in press section D. Those who feel lonely and afraid and on the edges of society, and the whole city got changed as a result. Now, just to be clear, our goal is not to be like the Dream Center. Our goal is to be like Jesus. But something of that spirit, I think, is really healthy. That we're not to be here, it's not about us getting into press section A, it's about us going to press section D and living with that sense of like humility and servant-heartedness. Some of you will know of John Wimber, who founded the Vineyard Network of Churches. He used to say, when people came in like wanting to grow and feeling cool, the first thing he'd do, he'd just give them a broom and say, hey, would you clear up? And he said he knew when people gladly served, that's where the blessing of God would rest. That's to be our hot posture this year. Everyone's welcome, and we're just here to serve. That's my job. My job is, I'm just here to serve you. I'm just here to serve the community. And we must stay humble like this lady. And then just thirdly and finally, last lesson, just like this woman, we must stay focused on Jesus and his power. I'll keep this one brief. Just a really simple observation from this lady. She does not even bring her daughter to Jesus. Like that's where the problem is. She doesn't bring her daughter to Jesus. She just knows, if I get close to Jesus, everything at home gets sorted. I'm like, can that be like a banner, a motto for our service? If we get close to Jesus, everything else at home gets sorted. I love that. You know, I imagine all of us have started the year with stuff going on at home, so to speak. Family, work, what's the future hold? Maybe our focus should be, if I get close to Jesus, everything there kind of takes care of itself. Now, all I'm basically doing through Mark 8, which is all that's happening in Mark 8, is I'm just like reaffirming the values that we're building our community on. Everyone here is welcome. We want to see many people find the life and love and peace and joy that only Jesus can bring. We want to make disciples. We are all involved in going to press section D, and we are utterly reliant on the presence and power of God. And so what I want to do, just to finish this talk, is just leave a moment for each of us, if you've not done this already in 2022, to in your heart say, I want to get close to Jesus. I want to recommit my life to him. In fact, I wonder if I could invite the band up, and can I just ask us to stand for a moment? And I'm just going to invite the presence of the Holy Spirit to come. And if you're thirsty for refreshment and life from God, I want to encourage you in this moment, open your heart. He loves you so much, and he wants to fill you afresh. Before I pray, here's just a moment in your heart to be like this amazing woman in this story. He's come for me. He's come for me. He loves me. I get the blessing too. It's for me. And in your heart to just be like, Jesus, I want to get close to you now. And I want this year to be lived close to Jesus. So Holy Spirit, we just invite you to come. We just ask you to fill us afresh with your presence. And across this room, wherever you look into each of our hearts and see men and women who are like, I want to get close to you, Jesus. I want to pray that you would feed our souls now in this moment. I want to ask that we'd hear your voice. I want to ask that we would receive your life. Come, Holy Spirit.